Morning, today's daf in the Avodah Zarah's daf yud. We are on Tes Amud Beis. We're at the very bottom of the Amud. We're starting with the words HaUshtara. There was this contract yesterday in the Gemara on Avodah Zarah daf Tes. So we were treated to a lot of Jewish history on a macro level and on a somewhat smaller level. We talked a macro level in terms of the age of the world. The world was created 5,778 years ago. That's Briyas HaOlam. And what the Gemara discussed yesterday on a macro level is that basically you take the world, its trajectory, its planned history is to go 6,000 years and to be broken up into three sections of 2,000 years. The first 2,000 years the Gemara described as Tohu, second 2,000 years the Gemara described as Torah, and the third 2,000 years is Yemos HaMashiach, the times of the Mashiach. As far as Mashiach coming during these last 2,000 years, the Gemara says that it should be arriving at any moment, but may have a sinner or a rabbin because of our sins, so it's delayed. This is the Gemara's macro timeline of Jewish history. In terms of just even a little bit smaller than that, we focused yesterday a lot in Bais Sheni on the Second Temple. During the Second Temple period, so it could be broken up into, I guess what we described yesterday as four different historical periods of time. The entire duration of Bais Sheni of the Second Temple was 420 years. The first 34 years was Paros, was the Persian Empire, the end of the Persian Empire. Persian Empire, which allowed the Jews to build the Bais Sheni. Then the next 180 years was the Greek rule. The truth of the matter is that it was really 186 years. But those first 6 years, the Greeks did not have world dominion. The first 6 years, they only ruled in Elam, a Persian province. And then after that, 180 years of domination, world domination. And then after that, we had let's call the Persians one period, the Greeks a second period. We had the Chashmonaim. We had then the rule of the Chashmonaim, which was the Gemara described yesterday as 103 years. And then followed by that, we had the rule of Herod and his family for the last years of Bais Sheni for another 103 years. Those last two sections of Bais Sheni totaled 206 years. The Gemara noted that of those 206 years, 26 of those years, the first 26 of those years, there was a peaceful pact that was made between the Jews and the Romans, and allowing the Romans to have a world domination. And then after that, the Romans subjugated the Jews. So truth be told, as the Gemara noted yesterday, for the last 180 years of the Second Temple, the Romans really subjugated the Jews. That is the second timeline that we saw in the course of yesterday's daf. Okay. And we went through a number of those details in yesterday's daf, but that is that was yesterday's discussion. In the Gemara today, we start now in the very bottom of Testament Beis. How started to have a Ksiv Bey? So there was a document. It was a civil document. It was a loan document, and on it it was Shishnin Yaseirasa. It had six extra years. Meaning, as Rashi points out, at the very top of Yud Amud Aleph, I'm reading the Rashi inside, Shabbat Lifnei Bezdin, B'Shana Shenich Vabo, V'Nim Sabo, Shei Shanim Yoser Mimenyanam. So a small problem with this dated contract is that it was 6 years ahead of where we are right now. Kigon Shayom Din B'Shana Chamesh Meos L'Machos Yavon. Let's say we currently stood 500 years since Machos Yavon. Remember we discussed yesterday that all contracts were dated from Machos Yavon, from the beginning of the Greek era. So if let's say we were standing 500 years post Greek era, meaning so it normally would have been dated at the year 500. And this contract was dated 506. So love a ploni me ploni, that so-and-so borrowed money from so-and-so. V'sasam hayakasa v'lo hayakasa bo shumachos. Now it didn't mention anything specifically. We assume it's going back to the Greek Empire, the beginning of the Greek Empire. And so basically, what are we looking at over here? We're looking at a post-dated document. And the Savar Rabbanan Kameh Rav Lameimar, we go back to the Gemara on the very top of Yud Amud Aleph. So the rabbis thought to say in front of Rava, Haishtar Mucha, so it's a post-dated document. Now, you remember the rules, we discussed this a number of times throughout the Bavas, is that if it's a pre-dated document, so the Gemara says that is absolutely no good. In other words, it's a shtar puzzle, it's a disqualified document, and that has no validity towards it whatsoever. If, however, we're talking about a post-dated document, so a post-dated document is not possible, but needless to say, well, we're going to say it, of course, needless to say that with a post-dated document, so you, the lender, do not have a lien on any of the properties until the date actually takes effect. So basically, you, the lender, have waived your rights to any type of lien until the date takes effect. So this is now a 6-year post-dated document. That's a long time. So ne'akveh demati hazmanet velo taref. So what did they figure to do with such a document? Basically, hold on to it for 6 years, and only 6 years from now can the lender start exercising a lien on the property. That's what they thought to say. I'm Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman says, no, I won't do that. Hi, Safra Dafkana Kasve. So he says that, look, as far as the scribe is concerned who wrote this document, Rav Nachman says, I know the scribe. He's Dafkana. He's somebody who writes very carefully. Meaning that Rav Nachman, who is familiar with the people who wrote documents around his time, remember Rav Nachman was the head of the court. So he says, I know this sofer. He's a good sofer. He knows what he's doing. So he says, I know what the scribe did. What the scribe did is he did go back to the beginning of the Greek Empire. But when he went back to the beginning of the Greek Empire, he also used the 6 years of the very beginning of the Greek Empire. As I mentioned, the beginning of Shir today, the Greek Empire started 34 years into Baisheni. But again, that year one of the Greek Empire was not really the beginning of their rule of the entire world. They only ruled 6 years later. But for those first 6 years, they ruled only in the province of Elam. So what this particular scribe did, now the Gemara doesn't explain why, Rav Nachum doesn't explain why, is that when he dated the document, he went all the way back to the very beginning of the Greek Empire, including their 6 years of rule in Elam. Uvizmani Kasvei, and he wrote it based on that date. So basically what Rav Nachman said is that, no, it's not a post-dated document. The document accurately reflects this year. You just have to know enough of your history to know in terms of what he dated back to. The Tanya, the Gemara quotes a Braisa, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Sheishanim Malchu Be'elam, for 6 years they ruled in Elam, they meaning the Greeks, V'achar kach pashtam achusan b'chol ha'olam kulo, and afterwards they then ruled over the entire world. Okay, Maskevla Rav Acha Bar Yaakov. So far now we have a post-dated document, and it seems to be 6 years ahead of time. And what the Gemara did is that basically it adjusted, what Rav Nachman did is it adjusted the document based on the fact that he knows that this particular sofer went back to the very beginning of the rule of Yavan. So the Gemara goes on to ask the following question. And how do I know that we are counting from the beginning of the Greek rule? Dilma Yitzias Mitzrayim Maninan, perhaps we're going back to Yitzias Mitzrayim. Meaning that this particular sofer actually used a different date to date his documents. And that is, he went back to the Exodus. Vishavkin al-Alpha Kama. Now, as far as writing which millennium they're in, so this particular sofer didn't do that. Meaning he left out the millennial. But in other words, he really is going back 1,000 years. Vinakti Alpha Basra. And basically, we're going to go back 1,000 years. And therefore, the document is in fact a post-dated document. Now, in order to understand and appreciate this point of the Gemara, again, let's just look once again at the timeline of history. What the Gemara here is noting is that if you go back from the beginning of the Greek rule, in other words, not year 34 of the Second Temple, but you go to year 40 of the Second Temple. And as we already pointed out, year 40 of the Second Temple represents where the Greeks took rule of the entire world. So if you go back to year 40, so now from that date, you actually go back an exact 1,000 years, and that was the Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that was the Exodus. Rashi over here points out, and I'm not going to go through the Rashi inside, but Rashi over here points out that the numbers work perfectly. In other words, how many years was it from Yetzias Mitzrayim to the building of the first temple? That's 480 years. Now you go another 410 years for the first temple. So now you're up to 890. Then you're going to go 70 years of Galus Bavel. That gets you to 960. Then you go 40 years into Baisheni, and that gets you 1,000. So it is exactly 1,000 years from Yetzias Mitzrayim until year 40 of the second temple, meaning the beginning of the Greek rule, but Greek rule, world domination. Greek rule. So the Gemara now is suggesting that maybe what the Sofer did is the Sofer chose not to date it back to the time of the beginning of the Greek rule, but rather decided to date it going back to Yetzias Mitzrayim. And what he just did is he just left off the one at the beginning, meaning the millennium. Assuming that everyone knows, of course, that he was going back to Yetzias Mitzrayim. So Amar Rav Nachman, Begol Eimonim El Amachi Yavanim Bavad. So Rav Nachman says it's just simply untenable. We don't do that. When we count going back, dating back to the Greek kings, we in the Galus, and we do not date back to Yetzias Mitzrayim. So now, who suffered the chuika matchile? Now, Rav Achava Yaakov thought that when Rav Nachman was arguing, he was just simply pushing him off, and he wasn't really giving him a valid reason. Nafak dak v'ashkach. However, he did some investigation, and he found the following brisa: D'tanya begole imonim elamachi yavanim bavad. The brisa says exactly like Rav Nachman said, that in the galus we only count from machi yavanim, and we do not count from any kind of Jewish historical date. I'm Ravina. And Ravina says, and I'll tell you what, if you look at the Mishnah carefully in Rosh Hashanah, you're going to see that this is exactly correct. Nine, the Gemara here quotes the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah. So there are two Mishnahs in Rosh Hashanah that we're going to be quoting from. One is the following. On the first day of Nisan, you remember the first Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, where there it goes over four Rosh Hashanahs. There are four calendaric dates in the Jewish calendar, each one of them having a significance in terms of beginnings. When we talk about the first day of Nisan, so it's Rosh Hashanah Melachim, it is the new year for kings. Ula Regalim, it's also the new year regarding Regal. Now, as far as Regal is concerned, that has to do with the Isra of Baal Te'acher. I'm not going to go through it right now. The Amrinan, as far as what we're focusing on right now, is the point of the kings. Lemalachim Lamayilchusa, what exactly is meant when it says it's Rosh Hashanah for kings? I'm Rav Chisalishtaros, it means for documents, meaning that when you're dating a document and you're dating it based on the king, so in terms of which year it is of the king, so the first day of Nisan is going to be the rollover year for every king. So in other words, if the king, let's say, took power on the first day of Adar, so a month later on the first day of Nisan, this is now year two of the king. Utanan, and the Gemara says now, it happens to be that in that Mishnah we also learn the following. Then the first day of Tishrei, it's a new year. The Shemitah, and not only is it the first year in terms of figuring out years, but it's also the first year in terms of Shemitah. Now when we say that it's the beginning for Shanim, what does that mean? I'm Rav Chisa L'Shtaros. Rav Chisa says it has to do with Shtaros. Now, the Gemara now notes that we have obviously a problem, meaning in that very Mishnah, Rosh Hashanah, we noted that Rosh Chodesh Nisan is the beginning of the year regarding documents, and we noted that the first day of Tishrei is the beginning of the year regarding documents, and that obviously serves as a stira. Kasha Shtaros HaAdadi, so that obviously means that there's a contradiction, Mishaninan, and our answer to that contradiction was, Kan Lamachi Yisro, Kan Lamachi Elv Dekachavim. It depends which kings are we talking about. Kings of the of Israel versus kings of the nations of the world. As far as kings from the nations of the world are concerned, so that goes to Tishrei. And as far as kings of Israel is concerned, that is data from Nisan. So now, as far as what we do, meaning the government now is going back to Galus, Rav Nachman. So which month do we count from? We count from the month of Tishrei. So based on the way we understood the Mishnah Rosh Hashanah, so now we know that if we're counting from Tishrei, so that means that we're turning to the non-Jewish kings of the world. If, in fact, this particular sofer was dating it back to the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, so that would be a Nisan dating, not a Tishrei dating. By virtue of the fact that we're dating from Tishrei, that is a clear indication that we're looking at the Greek monarchy, not Yetzias Mitzrayim. So the Gemara says it's in fact a very good proof. Okay, so what have we seen so far today? That there was a seemingly post-dated document. It was post-dated by 6 years. Rav Nachman said we don't have to say that. What we can actually say is that this particular sofer dated it back from the beginning of the Greek rule, which started 6 years earlier than the world domination. And as far as other possible datings, the Gemara rejects that, simply because we know that it was dated from the month of Tishrei, and Tishrei is a secular dating system. I say secular, I mean that it goes to the non-Jewish kings. But when it comes to the Jewish kings, that's always going to be dated by the Nisan by the month of Nisan. Okay. Yom Ginusa Shomachem. We continue in the Gemara. We're on Yud Amud Aleph. We are about halfway down on the Amud. We're at the two dots. We are noting now other pagan holidays. Other pagan holidays where there would be a prohibition from doing business with them. So the Gemara now turns to the line in the Mishnah. The Mishnah is going back on Ches Amud Aleph. The Mishnah talked about the day of Ginusia of their kings. My Yom Ginusia Shamachem. I'm Rav Yudash and Yom Shamamidem Bo Ovdi Kochavim Mismakam. The day of coronation, when they coronate their king. Vatan Yom Ginusia of Yom Shamamidem Bo Mismakam. The problem with such a pshat is because of the following Brisa. The Brisa says that it's Yom Ginusia and the day of coronation. Sounds like the two different things. Lo Kasha Adide Hadabre. So the Gemara says, well, we can suggest the following. When it says the Ginusia day, it's actually referring to the emperor's coronation. And when it says Yom Shemaminim Bo Es Malkam, we're talking about the day in which their son is coronated. Now the Gemara says, now this answer is a good answer, but only if you accept the following premise. And that is that they coronate their children. Vatini Rav Yosef, but the Gemara says, but Rav Yosef taught the following. And it's based on a pasuk in Ovadia. We know Ovadia, one of Treasar, Ovadia being the shortest sefer in Tanakh, in that it is a total of one parak. So Ovadia testifies regarding the regarding Malchus Edom, regarding the Edomite empire. And there, in the second pasuk of Ovadia, it says Hinei Katana Satech V'Goyim. This is in reference to Rome. Rome, we assume, of course, is a descendant of Edom. So it says that you are katonasate b'koim, you are small among the nations. And the Rav Yosef, now in explaining the pasuk in Ovadia, now remember we say this time and again, that as far as Targum is concerned on Navi, so the Targum on Navi is done by Rav Yosef. We've seen this in this Masechta alone numerous times. So regarding the pasuk in Ovadia, that you are small amongst the nations. So Rav Yosef, now in his Targum, Anavi writes, Emoshiv HaMelech B'melech. What makes him so inferior is the fact that they do not coronate their own children. Meaning, as far as their kings are concerned, the ascension of the next king is random and haphazard, and it's not based on lineage. And, going back to the Pasuk in Ovadia, Bazuri Atama Od, so you are a nation that is despised, Shein Lahem Lo Ksav Lo Lashon, they do not have their own language. As far as them not having their own language, so Rashi writes, Rashi is the third wide line towards the bottom of the Amud. Ksav Lashon Sharomi Me'uma Acheres Ba'aluhu, Achem Tiknolem Kol Sifrehim. As far as both the language and the writing of Rome, so Rashi writes that it does not come from them, it's not original, neither their language or the way they wrote. Rashi says that it comes from other nationalities. Rashi does not tell us where it comes from, but it comes from other nationalities. You take a look at the second Tosfos on the Amud. Tosfos points out that this is not the only nation that has borrowed languages and scripts from other nationalities. See Tosfos for discussion of why Rome was spelled out for this particular insult. Anyway, we're going back to the Gemara. So the Gemara says, so now we know that they don't appoint their own children as kings, so we once again have to look for now a new pshat. Elamai Yom Ginusia, Yom Aleda. So the Yom Ginusia is a reference to the birthday. So on the king's birthday, so basically it turned into a pagan holiday. V'atanya Yom Ginusia Yom Aleda. The Gemara says, yeah, the problem with that pshat is I have another brisa. And this brisa says that Yom Ginusia and Yom Aleda, again indicating that they are two different things. Lokasha Adidei Adabre. So the Gemara says that when we're talking about Yom Ginusia, we're talking about the king's birthday. And when we say Yom Haleda, we're talking about the king's son's birthday. King's son's birthday also turned into a pagan holiday as well. V'atanya Yom Ginusia Shalom Yom Ginusia Shobanau. Yom Haleda Shalom Yom Haleda Shobanau. Gemara over here is confounded because we have another Brisa. And the Brisa over here describes Yom Ginusia, his Yom Ginusia and his son's Yom Ginusia. His Yom Haleda and his son's Yom Haleda. Again, clearly, Yom Ginusia and Yom Aleda are two different things. Elamai Yom Ginusia, Yom Shema, Midim Bo Malkam. So the Gemara goes back to a pshat that it rejected just a moment ago, and that was that we're talking now about the day in which they were coronated. Now, again, the problem with that was that we had a brisa earlier that indicated that that is not described, that's not Yom Genusia. So Yom Shemamina Bamakam Velo Kasha Hadideh Hadabre. So the Gemara says, okay, going back to a pshat that we didn't like a little bit earlier, we're talking about his coronation and his kid's coronation. V'i Kashyalan. Now, of course, the problem with this is that we had the brisa earlier, the Lo Mukmi Maka Bamaka, because based on the Targum that Rav Yosef gave on the Pasuk in Avadja, they do not appoint their children as kings. The Gemara says yes. The Navi Avadja is describing, generally speaking, what happens amongst the Romans. Generally speaking, they do not appoint their king, their sons as kings. The Gemara says, but it is done in rare times. One of those rare times was Asvirus Bar Antoninus, the Malach. The son of Antoninus was in fact appointed a king of Rome, and it was done by his father. So Amarle Antoninus Larabi. So here we begin, and we're going to be beginning now for the today until the rest of the daf. Divrei Agadata. The Gemara is going to give us some fantastic Agadata regarding Antoninus Rebbe and some of the more famous Agadata coming up. So Amale Antoninus the Rebbe. So here we begin now a conversation that takes place between Antoninus and Rebbe. So just before we start with the actual Gemara, so let's just remind one another. As far as Rebbe is concerned over here, we're talking about Rebbe Yehuda Anasi. Rebbe Yehuda Anasi. Really ending the period of the Tanayim. He's the Masada Mishnayos. He's the editor, the grand editor of the Mishnayos. And so he's living around the year 200 of the Common Era. So Antoninus was the Roman Caesar at the time. Historically, which Caesar are we describing? Okay, so the name seems to indicate which Caesar we're describing. But the Gemara over here now notes that these two great leaders, the Rebbe, the leader of the Jews in Israel at the time, and Antoninus, the leader of Rome at the time, so they shared a very special relationship. The Gemara, in the course of the remainder of today's daf, is going to be giving some amazing episodes and incidents that connect the two together. So the Gemara starts off with the following: Amarle Antoninus the Rebbe. So Antoninus said the following to Rebbe. What I want is I want my son to take my place, meaning I want to basically appoint my son as a king. And also I want Tveria. Now Tveria was where the Jews were living at the time, meaning we are now approximately 150, 170 years after Chorban Bayis Sheni. The Jews, the yeshivas and the Jewish rule moved up north to the towns of Tveria. So Antoninus wanted to make Tveria into a kalanya. Now it's interesting, and if I transliterated the word, it would sound like a colony. Colony usually indicates that you're going to tax the nation. Interestingly enough, what Antoninus wanted to do was just the opposite. Not tax Tveria, but he wanted to make Tveria tax-free. You look at Rashi, three lines from the bottom of the Amud. Bas Chorin, Shelo Titein Masla Olam, Mishum De Isbe Rabbanan. Tveria was where many Jewish rabbis lived, and what he wanted to do was he wanted to declare the entirety of Tveria as a tax-free zone. Rashi over here foreshadows some of the Gemara coming up ahead. Antoninus served Rebbe. Antoninus was a lover of the rabbis, and therefore was interested in making Tveria a tax-free zone. So, what he was looking for, looking from Rebbe, was advice, because basically he had two major requests that he wanted to make amongst the Roman Senate, and what he was fearful of is that he would not be able to get past both of these points by the Senate. And so vi'i emaluhu, going back to the Gemara, emaluha da avi chelo avde. So basically what he said to Rebbe is, look, what I can do is I can get one of these things done. There's no way I'm going to be able to get both of these things done. And he would seek from Rebbe some political advice. I say Gavra. So what Rebbe did is the following. Now, from this point going forward, what we're going to see is that the way that Rebbe communicated with Antoninus sometimes was verbal communication, and other times it was just simply, other nonverbal forms of communication. Isi Gavra. So what Rebbe did is he brought a man, Arkave Achavre, had him riding on top of another man, put a dove in the hand of the person riding on top. Now he said to the one on the bottom, tell the person on top of you, meaning tell the person on your shoulders to let go of the dove. So Amar, so this was the nonverbal communication that Rebbe gave to Antoninus, and the Gemara explains very simply. Amar Antoninus said, Shmamina hachi kamerli. Oh, I understand exactly what Rebbe's telling me. At by minayda spheres b'riyim loch tachtawi. In other words, what's going to happen is that I'm going to have my son take my place as the king of Rome, the ruler of Rome. The aim alel asvarya setavitere kalonia. And instead of me asking for Tveria to become a tax-free zone, I'm going to ask my son to legislate that. Wonderful advice that was given from Rebbe to Antoninus. Next, Amrle mitzaron lechashuvai Romai. He says that the chashuvai, the important people of Rome, they're making me crazy. So perhaps he's describing over here the Senate of Rome. In any regard, so Maile Legina. So what Rebbe would do is he would take Antoninus into his garden and kul yom akarle pugla mimishre kameh. And each day what he would do is he would take a radish and pick it out from the garden, but only one radish at a time. So Antoninus says, oh, I totally understand what Rebbe's telling me. He's saying, "Ad keto chad chad minayu, kill them only one at a time. And that way there will not be a rebellion if I kill off the Senate one at a time. Now, Velema le meimar behejo. Gemara says, now all this was very good advice that was given from Rebbe to Antoninus. Why didn't Rebbe just simply tell Antoninus? Why did they do this in the form of play and mime? Why did he just simply say to him, this is the way you should handle it? So the Gemara's explanation, very simply, because if he's overheard giving this kind of advice to Antoninus, so then, of course, needless to say, he's going to get blamed and he will be persecuted. So the Gemara says, "Vale malei balachash." Why not just whisper it? The Gemara's answer: "Mishum dechsiv ki of shemayim yolechetz akol." Oh, the expression. The Gemara doesn't use the expression over here. Gemara uses it elsewhere. But basically, the walls have ears. Even if he tries to whisper it, whispering is not going to help. It's going to be found out that he is the one providing this information over to Antoninus. So literally the expression is "keof shamayim yolechetz akol." Birds are able to send information from one place to another. We continue in the Gemara on Yud Amud Beis. More episodes and incidents regarding Rebbe and Antoninus. Havalei ha'u barta d'shamegira. Now I'm gonna say over the story. I'm gonna read it over like Rashi. It's a rather remarkable story. There was a daughter. Antoninus had a daughter. Name of the daughter was Gira. Ka'avda esura. She did something. Rashi over here says that she was Mazana, she committed adultery, and Shardalei Gargira. So what Rebbe did is Rebbe sent a type of herb, it's called the Gargira, over to over to Antoninus, and what was he trying to communicate by sending over the Gargira? So, I'm sorry, Antoninus sent to Rebbe, sorry, other way around, Antoninus sent to Rebbe the herb called Gargira. It's a rocket, that's the name of the herb, and you take a look at Rashi actually describes it as something very similar to a rocket, and Vehaven Rebbe Mali Ula Esav Azeh Vade Simana Havadashach Le Gargira Nirgara V'Nimshach Lev Gira. It means that the heart of Gira, that's the name of his daughter, was taken, meaning she succumbed to adultery. Imano Ofim Yodea Haya Lomod Antoninus. And what he was looking for was advice from Rebbe. What should he do? So Shardalei, so now Rebbe sent back to Antoninus Kusbarta. Kusbarta, another type of herb, a coriander. And what Rashi, the way Rashi describes it, Rebbe Kusbarta Balaz Alunira Klamar Shechot Habat. And what this message was you must kill your daughter. Look at Rashi. Kusbarta Shtei Shtemilas. The Kusbarta is really a contraction of two words. Kos means to shecht. We've seen that a number of times throughout the Gemara. And Barta, of course, means your daughter. So the advice that Rebbe gives back to Antoninus was you have to shecht your daughter. So Shadalei Karte. The response that he got back was a leak, meaning Antonina sent a leak over to Rebbe, and Rashi explains, Klomer im ken yikare zari. Yeah, but if this were to happen, this, so then my progeny would be cut off. Now, it's interesting because we just learned a moment ago that he did have a son, and he appointed his son over the Malchus. Could be that this story was before he had the son. Could be. Anyway, so he did not want to kill off his daughter as he wouldn't have any more progeny. Shach lechasa, so then he sent him over lettuce, right? Lechugas is Rashi. Klamer chos Allah. So to which Rebbe said, okay, if that's the case, then you should have compassion over her. Okay, so a very strange give and take that takes place between Rebbe and Antoninus all through the vehicle of vegetables and herbs. Anyway, the Gemara tells another story. It is a little bit strange that Rebbe was giving advice to Antoninus that he should kill his daughter. If you take a look at Tosus is bothered by that. Top Tosus on the Amud. Tosus has a different way of explaining the give and take between Rebbe and Antoninus. See Tosus for a slightly different take on how this communication went. We're continuing in the Gemara. Kol Yuma Havashadalei Dehava Pircha B'Matrasa. Every day, what Antoninus would be sending to Rebbe was gold that was crushed up. It was placed in a leather sack and Chite Apumayu. What he did is he put wheat on the top of the gold sack so that it was not evident that basically what Antoninus doing was he was giving Rebbe gold. So Am Lahu Amtuya Chite Le Rebbe. So and he told his servants to bring the wheat over to Rebbe. So Am Le Rebbe looks Achinas. Rebbe says, I don't need it. It's Leituva. I have plenty. Remember, the Gemara elsewhere says that Rebbe was one of the wealthiest people that existed in Jewish history. And he says, I have it. I have plenty. Amar lahavala man de basrach. So Antonina said to Rebbe, it's not for you. It's for the one coming after you, meaning your children. De havala basrai. He's going to give it to the one after that, meaning your grandchildren. De asu basrach. Udaaseminayu, because those coming after you, meaning your children and your grandchildren, nefuk alayhu. They're going to need to give it over to me, meaning not me, but meaning my descendants. Meaning Antoninus realized that although he was extraordinarily sympathetic to the Jewish people, more than sympathetic, he loved the Jewish people. Although he was very sympathetic to the Jewish people, he knew that he was an anomaly. He knew that his children and his grandchildren, the next Roman emperors are not going to be that sympathetic to the Jewish people. And basically what he was doing was he was funding the future of the Jewish people, so that in the event that taxes are going to be demanded from them, so that they would have the money to pay for all future taxes. Havilehai Nikrasa. The Gemara continues telling more stories about Rebbe and Antoninus. There was a cave. Dahave Aile Mibesa Lebes Rebbe. And that went from the house of Antoninus to the house of Rebbe. It would be, of course, a little bit strange to have a cave going all the way from Rome to Tveria, where Rebbe lived. So most probably we're talking about where Antoninus had some sort of house in Israel, right? It wouldn't be crazy to speculate that it was around the Caesarea area, but anyway, in other words, but there was a cave, an underground cave leading from Rebbe to Antoninus. Now, when Antoninus would go from his cave to the cave of Rebbe, he would take with him two slaves. Now, as he went to the house of Rebbe, he killed one slave. And when he returned from the house of Rebbe, so he killed the second slave. Now, the killing of the slaves obviously is a little bit strange, and I'm being generous when I say a little bit strange. And you can see the second Tosus over here, who was bothered by the obvious question. That's called murder, and it's one of the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach. And how can Antoninus kill two slaves for every visit? See Tosus for a couple of suggestions in terms of how that works. Anyway, the simple point of the Gemara is that these visits were done in stealth. Nobody was supposed to know about these visits. Amar Lei, now, Antoninus said to Rebbe, "Be'ina de'asina, when I come to you, Alonishkach Kvar Kamach. There shouldn't be anyone there. Yumachadish Kachela Rebbe Chanina Bar Chama Davi Yosef." Now there was one visit in which Antoninus came to Rebbe's house and he was surprised because he saw another rabbi there. His name was Rebbe Chanina Bar Chama. So Amar Santinis was very upset. Lo amina loch bidna dasina lanishkach gvar kamach. So Antinis said to Rebbe, didn't I warn you that when I come, there shouldn't be anybody, any other person there? Amar Lei, Rebbe said to Antinis, Leis din bar inish. Not to worry, this person is not a person. Rebbe said regarding Rebbe Chanina, he's not really, he's not human. So Amar Lei, Lema Lei, Ha'u Havda, Degane Abba, Dikam Valese. So Antonin is testing out how quote unquote special this guest of Rebbe is. So Antonin gave instructions to Rebbe. You tell him, meaning Rebbe Chanina, that the guard that's standing by the doorway should come in and enter. Now remember, we just learned a moment ago that every time that Rebbe got to the house that every time that Antonius got to the house of Rebbe, he killed one of his servants. So the guard that was sleeping by the door wasn't sleeping by the door. He was dead. So basically, he gave Rebbe Chanina an impossible task, and that is tchias amesim, and get the guy to come back in here. Azar Rebbe Chanina bar Chama. Now Rebbe Chanina bar Chama goes to the front of the cave, and of course sees the dead guard. Ashkechei davakatol. He saw that he was killed. Amar hechi avid. So Rabbi Chanina realized that he was put in an almost impossible position. If I come back and I say that the man was killed, well, you know, you shouldn't be the one giving bad news. So I should not. It's not right for me to be giving this kind of information. Should I just simply go back? So come azazim b'machusa, but I was given very special instructions that I should bring him back with me. By Rachmei Alay, so what Rabbi Chanina did is that he davened on behalf of this guard, and he actually performed Tchias HaMesim. Vishadre, and he sent him to Antoninus. Amar Yadan Zutidis Bechu Mechai Mesim. So Antoninus says, look, I know you guys know, even the Zute, even the small ones amongst you, meaning he viewed Rabbi Chanina as small compared to Rabbi. I know that you could perform Tchias HaMesim. But mi'u bi'idna da'asina lo nishkach ina kamach. But I said to you that when I come, there should be nobody else there. Basically, what Antonina said is, look, I'm very impressed, but can you please follow my instructions? I told you nobody else should be there when I come. Kol yuma ma mishamish l'rebi. Every day he'd be serving Rebbe. Machole, he'd be serving him food, mashkele, and drink. He'd have a bai Rebbe l'mesik l'puria. And when Rebbe wanted to go into his bed, have a gach and kame puria. What Antonius did would do is he would bend down so that Rebbe can step on top of him. Amar le saki lave la poryach, climb up on me in order to go to your bed. Amar lava orchara le zuzale be mechusi kulehai. He says, look, it's a zuzal amachos. I can't, that's degrading to the king. You're a king. I can't step on top of you. Amar, if I could serve as the mat beneath you in terms of olam haba, that would make me happy. Meaning Antoninus realized that as much as he was a king in this world, it would be nothing compared to the schar that he would get in Olam Haba for being Meshamash Tamid Chacham and for serving a Tamid Chacham, especially someone as special as Rebbe. Amarle Asin La Amidase, will I enter into the world to come? Amarle in. So Rebbe's response is, yeah, Amarle V'Aksev Lo Yes Arid L'Beis Esav. But the Antoninus who knew Tanakh, he said that there's Lo Yes Arid. There's not going to be any kind of sarid, any remnant of the house of Esav. Once again, we're going back to the Pesukim and Ovadja, right? If we're talking about Rome, Ovadja is going to be making a lot of play in today's daf. So the Gemara says, we know that the Navi Ovadja says that there's not going to be any remnants of Esav. But Osem Isa Esav, to which Rebbe's response is, no, that's somebody who behaves like Esav. Taina me'achid, the Gemara quotes a brisa, v'lo yesarid l'beis Esav, there's not going to be any remnant of the house of Eva, yachol akol, tamalomar, live Esav, v'osem ha'isa Esav, that's only when they behave like Esav. Amalei v'aksiv shama edom achav v'chol nesiyah. The Gemara quotes another pasuk, this is from Yecheskel. It says that their Edom is going to be the kings and the nesiyim. So amalei ma'achav lo kol ma'achah. No, I'm sorry, by the way, parenthetically, their meaning in Gehenna. That's where the kings of Esav are going to be. So to which Rebbe's response is, Malacha v'lo kol malacha. Yeah, most of the kings are going to be there, not all the kings. Kol nesiyah v'lo kol sareha. all the ministers of Esav are going to be there, but not all of the all the presidents are going to be there, but not all the ministers. Tanya, I'm happy the Gemara quotes a brisa malachev lo kol malachecha, kings, but not all the kings. Kol nesiyev lo kol sereha, presidents, yes, but not the ministers. Malachev lo kol malachecha, prat lantaninus ben asviras. And the Gemara says the exclusion obviously is a reference to Antoninus. He is not going to be sent to Gehenna, but rather he's going to get a chelk in olam haba. And kol nesiyev lo kol sereha, prat lekitia bar shalom. And as far as which one of the ministers is not going to go to Gehenna, so that is a reference to Kitiyah Bar Shalom. Kitiyah Bar Shalom Mahiv. The Gemara now just simply goes over who exactly is Kitiyah Bar Shalom and what did he do to merit Olam Haba. Da'u Kesar, da'av son of Yehuda. There was a Caesar who hated the Jews. Amlu Chashiv de Machusa. He asked the dignitaries, Misha Alalo Nima Biraglo. If let's say you have some sort of infection, what do you do? Yikten of Yichya. Should he cut off the foot so that he live? Or leave it on and suffer? So Amru lo, so they said to him, Yikten v'yichya, so you should cut it off. Amru lo Ketiyah Bar Shalom, so Ketiyah Bar Shalom, who was one of the advisors to the Caesar, he said, Achada lo yichata lo kula. They are scattered all over the world, explains Rashi, and as a result of that, you can't just simply cut them off. Diachsiv ki gaba ruchas hashemayim pereshti eschem. You're spread out over the entire, like the four winds, my kamar. What does that pasuk mean? Ilem debadrasim bar baruchos. If it's just simply that they went in all four directions, hi ki ar baruchos li ar baruchos mi baile. Grammatically, the pasuk should have said li na ki. Ela kishem sheyesh ala olam b'lo ruchos. Just like the world cannot exist without the winds, kach yesh ala olam b'lo yisrael. So too, the world cannot exist without the Jewish people. They're all over the world. Vod karle machusa kitia. And not only that, but your kingdom will be a severed kingdom. So Amarle Meimer Shapa Kamar. So the Caesar said to Ketiyah Bar Shalom, okay, you gave really good advice. However, Miu called the Zach Lamalka Shadulan le Kamunya Khalila. So, but what you did is you beat me in a debate, and you know the consequences of beating Caesar in a debate is that you're sent into the Kamunya Khalila. Rashi simply describes it as the house is filled with dirt. It could be some sort of coliseum. Whatever. In other words, he sends them to be killed. So now as Caesar's men were taking him to this chamber, so the woman called out to Ketiyah, woe to the ship. Ilfa over here is a reference to a ship that goes and not having paid its taxes. This is obviously code. Rashi explains, Klomar, meaning the Rashi, you're not going to get a portion together with them because you didn't do a bris milah. Okay. Now, he's not Jewish. There's no mitzvah for him to do a bris milah. So, not perfectly clear how it is that a prerequisite to be getting part of Olam Haba is that he necessarily needs to do a bris milah. Admittedly, that part's a little bit difficult to understand. But anyway, but he understood what the woman was telling him. Nafa al resheda arlase ekata. So somehow what he was able to do was cut off his foreskin. Amar yahave mechse. He says, now I paid off my taxes. Khalifa v'ivris. So now I'm going to be able to get into the world to come. Could be, again, the Gemara doesn't make this point very clear. It could be that he was megayer, that at this point in time he converted. Anyway, kika shadale. So as he was being thrown in, Amar kol nechse le Rabbi Akiva v'chavera. Realizing that this, of course, is the end of his life, so now he does estate planning, and he says that all my possessions should go over to Rabbi Kiva and his colleagues. Yatzar Rabbi Kiva v'darish v'aisal Aaron Levanov. So now, as far as how much exactly Rabbi Kiva was going to be receiving, so he divided it basically the way that the lechem upon him is divided. Mechzal Aaron, mechzal Levanov. That the half the loaves are given to Aaron, the other half are given over to his children. So that, in other words, half the possessions of Ketiyah should go to Rabbi Akiva, and the other half to his colleagues. Yasa Baskal v'Amra, Ketiyah Bar Shalom Mezum l'Chayil Amaba. And out comes a Baskal saying that Ketiyah is going to be receiving a portion of the world to come. Bacha Rabbi v'Amar, Yesh Kona Olama B'Shah Achas, V'Yesh Kona Olama B'Kama Shanim. Some people get Olam Haba in one moment, and some people need a lifetime in order to get Olam Haba. And as we finish the daf today, so the Gemara here records the following epilogue. Antinus Shamshe Larebi, Adrach and Shamshe Larav. There were two people who get special note at the end of today's daf. Antonina served Rebbe, and Adrachan, which he was some sort of dignitary. Rashi just simply says that he was a sar sheba ovdei kochav maya, some sort of minister. So he served Rav. Ki shachiv Antoninus amar Rebbe. When Antoninus died, Rebbe said, "Dispart a chavila, the bundle was unraveled." And ki shachiv Adarkan, and when Adarkan died, amar Rav, "Dispart a chavila, the bundle becomes undone." So, in other words, there was a special love that Antoninus and Rebbe had with one another, special love that Adarkan had together with Rav, and they both were eulogized in a similar manner when they died, one respectively by Rebbe and that of Rav. Okay, we stop today. Tomorrow, Unklus. We start with the Gemara here retelling us some stories regarding Unklus.